Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 13, Dhritarashtra-kuit Song, Text 44. Yaman yase dhruvam lokam
Yaman yase dhruvam lokam
Adhruvam vanachobayam
Adhruvam vanachobayam
Sarvatanaisochaste
Sarvatanaisochaste
Snehat anyatra mohaja
Snehat anyatra mohaja
Yat,
even though
Manyase, you think, Dhruvam,
absolute truth,
Lokam,
persons,
Adhruvam,
non-reality,
Va,
either,
Na,
or not,
Cha,
also,
Vayam,
or both wise.
Sarvata,
in all circumstances.
Na,
never.
He
certainly.
Socha,
subject for lamentation.
Subject for lamentation.
They,
thy. Sorry, no.
Not reading, but
they.
Sneha,
due to affection.
Due to affection.
Anyatra,
or otherwise.
Mahaja,
due to bewilderment.
Translation.
He wasn't there.
O King, in all circumstances, whether you consider the soul to be an eternal principle, or the material body to be perishable, or everything to exist in the impersonal absolute truth, or everything to be an inexplicable combination of matter and spirit, feelings of separations are due only to illusory affection and nothing more. Purport. The actual fact is that every living being is an individual part and parcel of the Supreme Being, and his constitutional position is subordinate cooperative service, either in his conditional material existence or in his liberated position of full knowledge in eternity. The living entity is eternally under the control of the Supreme Lord, but those who are not conversant with factual knowledge put forward many speculative propositions about the real position of the living entity. It is admitted, however, by all schools of philosophy that the living being is eternal and that the covering body of the five material elements is perishable and temporary. The eternal living entity transmigrates from one material body to another by the laws of karma, and material bodies are perishable by their fundamental structures. Therefore, there is nothing to be lamented in the case of the soul being transferred into another body, for the material bodies perishing at a certain stage. There are others also who believe in the merging of the spirit soul in the supreme spirit when it is uncovered by the material encagement, and there are others who also do not believe in the existence of spirit soul, but believe in tangible matter. In our daily experience, we find so many transformations of matter from one form to another, but we do not lament such changing features. In either of the above cases, the force of divine energy is uncheckable, and nobody has any hand in it, and thus there is no cause of grief. Yet manyase, the opening words, I like them, even though you think. We all think. Everyone is thinking, so much thinking, too much thinking. And we are quite convinced, me too, that what we think is right, that we have it all figured out, and that everything is totally clear, and we have an opinion. So it is very difficult to give up this thinking, this element where we have a concept in our head, a particular opinion of what is happening. Is that a phone that's interfering? That's nice.
Switch it up, just in case.
The So, whatever's interfering. The now we can understand philosophy that the soul is eternal. But to say that there's no grief when someone dies seems to be still not fully satisfying the heart, because someone may be eternal, but we will no longer have the association of a person when the person dies. So one might say that it's not satisfying, this answer. See the point? But that's not a fact, because that particular attachment, that is artificial. Attachment to father, mothers, brothers and sisters, and aunties and uncles and cousins and nephews and, you know, and distant relatives, is all false. Is all not at all relevant, because it's temporary. It cannot stay. Can relationships survive death? Maybe they can.
I think it's because it's wireless marriage.
Yeah, well, isn't there a wire, an ordinary microphone, something real?
Today I have this thing. Yeah, and other days I have a wire and it's great. I love wires. I hate wireless mics.
The wired one does more interference. The wired one has more interference.
Yeah? Why?
A ghost in this building,
I think. I think it's a rotten wire that needs to be sold. I don't believe in ghosts and wires. But anyway.
Okay. The,
so, all the relationships, they are temporary to start off with. So we may feel so much grief, but Bhagavatam is not taking that grief very seriously, because Bhagavatam is saying that is simply a false imposition on your true nature. It is some temporary attachment. It may be so deep, it may be so strong, but it is just a temporary imposition on your nature. It will go with time. And as you are getting more and more attached in the eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, less and less are these other relationships so prominent and significant. So that is why Bhagavatam says it's not, there is no grief. And it just basically says there is no grief, which is something hard to experience. We do experience grief. We do. Now, when it comes to relationships between Vaishnavas, then it's different. And we're speaking of transcendental relationships. And then the grief is also transcendental. Not because we necessarily are liking the externals. Like it is mentioned in the Upadeshamrita, that one should not judge a Vaishnava on his external appearance. That means one should not look at a Vaishnava who is very ugly, that, oh, you know, he's not a very elevated person. Or one should also not think that, oh, his physical beauty, his physical this, his physical that, it's of secondary importance. Maybe someone has been graced a wonderful body which shows certain features of which reflects features of spiritual advancement, but it may not necessarily be the case. That whatever the body is, the soul is the essence. Therefore, the spiritual master, the essence really are his instructions, not his vapu, his vani, not his vapu, not his personal presence. It's the instructions where we really meet the spiritual master. In the Lilamrita there is a description, in the Prabhupada Lilamrita, there's a description of how Prabhupada visits New Vrindavan, and it is evening time, and as he's arriving, and they have this road going over the farm, which they call Agasura Road, because it's just bumpy, and it's just like a path that that twists like a snake, and it's a very rough path, and there's no question of any vehicles going over it, at least in those days. So, therefore the devotees, they had made a palanquin, and they were carrying Prabhupada in this palanquin, and they were carrying him over the Agasura Road, and there were devotees with torches all around it. So this whole parade was going into the night, a palanquin being carried and torches, and it was just out of this world. And everyone who saw it just thinks like, this is out of this world. And one devotee was trying frantically to get closer to Prabhupada and push through the crowd right up front, right to be there with Prabhupada, only to realize that still there was a huge distance to Prabhupada. Because one could not come close to Prabhupada simply by being in close physical proximity. No. Closeness would come by alignment with Prabhupada's desires. And the more one was aligned with Prabhupada's desires, the more intimacy was there, and the more closeness was actually experienced. And this point is so important. This point, and it's hard to thoroughly realize that, to just embrace that vani as sirumani, as a jewel on the head, to somehow or other have this this amazing jewel on the head, Vani Sirumani, the jewel of the instruction of the spiritual master. Wear it on the head as a valuable gift. My spiritual master so kindly expands my vision by asking me to do things that I don't always like to do. In my case, writing reports about New York, which is what I've been doing yesterday for something like 15 hours. And but then, what can we say? When I told him it would be finished soon, he was so happy. Yeah. So it's not so simple to take this vani. Sometimes we carry it as a duty on the head. Other times we embrace it with love. Whatever may be, whether it is tapasya or whether it is ecstasy, that vani. So we must fix ourselves. Usually we cannot fix ourselves very long if we don't like it. We can fix ourselves very well when we like it. Then we can do it. Yes. Oh, I like it a lot. Totally fixed. Yes, yes, yes. So fixed. But if we don't like it, oh, how can I do this? How much longer can I do this? But the vani of the spiritual master, one has to fix. One has to fix. So this is the process where we have to practice this. Tapo divyam putraki yena sattvam brahma sukhyam tanantam. One has to practice tapo divyam. And actually our tapo divyam, our divine austerity, is to give up our independence and to simply realign ourselves to the desire of the spiritual master. And then we surrender and say, Guru Maharaj, I'm yours. Please tell me what to do. And then he says, please take your independence back right now. Take it back and manage your life for Krishna. Can you imagine all these people surrendering to a spiritual master? I am your property. Please, I am your vani, your instruction. That's what I am made of. Please tell me what to do. Forget it. I'm not going to tell you what to do. You just figure it out. Use your intelligence. That's the first instruction. The first instruction is use the brain, and somehow or other, with that brain, try to figure out how to please Krishna. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya vajana. We'll give you principles. Principles we will give. Whatever is favorable for Krishna, accept. Whatever is not favorable for Krishna, reject. Now you go figure it out. I'm not going to stand next to you. That's okay.
That's not okay. You can take that.
You cannot take that. No way. Only your mother can do that. No one else. Not a spiritual master. It's not possible. Mothers, they have this amazing potency. I mean, all glories to the mothers. They are, like, in some ways, they are the greatest. Because they are tolerant. Mother Sachi, she is also known as I. I is the Bengali word for the original mother. So she's the primeval mother, the mother of all mothers. Right? And Mother Sachi is then, she's just described as I, just at the point when Nimai was getting unreasonable. Nimai would have his moments that he was unreasonable and that he would demand things. And he wanted to worship the Ganga. Yes, my darling, that is a wonderful idea. Give me a moment and I'll bring the puja place. No! Not a moment! I don't want to wait! I want it now! But Nimai, please, no! And he had a total outburst, and he just grabbed a stick. He grabbed a stick and went wild in the house and just went through the whole house and starts smashing things. Smashing things. Goes into the kitchen, smashes everything. I mean, she has clay cooking pots, right? I mean, a stick and clay cooking pots is not a great combination. Smashed to pieces everything. He threw everything on the ground, all the ingredients in the kitchen. She tolerated it. She could see he's beyond himself. There's no reason will not work at this stage. Yeah. Then, somehow or other, and when it was time for lunch, she cooked a lunch. She managed to prepare a lunch. And after she put it on the table, then she said, my dear Nimai, this will be the last meal that I will serve. Because you have just destroyed all the ingredients. So. And then Nimai, he opened his hand and he produced a tola of gold. A tola is like a thumb. A whole thumb of gold. That's worth money. Gold. Golden thumb. Poof. And he just produced this gold. And then she was totally shocked. She didn't say anything anymore. Where did he get this? And when we are in financial trouble, then he just manifests something just like that. Huh? Yes, he even did it as a child. Even as a child. Because as a child, one time he hit his mother. And his mother, she fell on the ground and acted as if she was dead, as if she has fainted or unconscious. So, you know, and then Nimai, the child, was totally shocked. My God, did I do that? You know what I mean? What do we do? What do we do now? And all the neighbor ladies said, if you bring a coconut, then she'll be okay. And then he went out of the house and just manifested this coconut from nowhere. Just manifested the coconut and brought the coconut. Their mother said, anyway, these things were going on. So I was tolerating everything. She was tolerance personified. Because that is required when one is a teacher. A mother is known as guru. Putana is known as a false guru. She's a false guru. Because a mother is supposed to instruct the child for its benefit. And the child is trusting that, you know, this mother is going to tell me what is beneficial for me. I don't know, she'll say. But that kind of trust has to also develop in the relation with our spiritual master. Even mothers, sometimes they give you like this horrible stuff, right? Horrible. There was this elixir which was made of certain berries in the sand dunes that tasted like, oh God, I couldn't even get it past my nose. Oh God, and then I had to swallow the stuff. Oh. But still, even though you hate it, you still trust it. No one can get me to do such things except the mother or the spiritual master. Now the spiritual master. Now even my mother can get me to do such things. But the spiritual master still can. He can't get me to do anything, whatever it is. God, I hope he's not going to take me to test on this one. So we are human. We are human. But we position ourselves. When we are a disciple, we position ourselves. We say, yes, I will. I am the property of my spiritual master. He can sell me. He can do anything he wants. Anything. Whatever. And I trust him. I trust him that it will be for my benefit. But this is not so simple, this guru-disciple relationship. And of course, you know, we can focus on the physical features. That Prabhupada's lotus feet were pink at the bottom. We find such descriptions about Prabhupada. And of course, Prabhupada had transcendental feet, absolutely. To touch these feet would have been something. But one devotee told Prabhupada, I want to always sit at your feet. And Prabhupada said, that will be very difficult because my feet are always moving. So he meant to say, that's not the point. It's not the point that we sit here and, oh, I am so inspired. No, the point is, do something. Do something. Prabhupada said, just as it's not enough to be disciple, you must do something. He said, just like you are all from America, he said. You're all from America. America is the most important nation in the world. It's just like the leading nation in the world. Everything they do in America is big, first class, da, 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 da. He said, therefore, it's not enough to just say, I'm American. Now you have to do something American. That was the next. Okay, you can be American. You can be first class. Then do something American. So that point is to be made. Vani. Vani, the instruction. And these Devani, the instruction, is relating to the nature of the soul. And it goes to the very essence, it goes to the eternal. This knowledge is eternal. And because the soul is eternally active, therefore Vani is also active. The instruction is also active. The instruction relates to activity. Because the soul is eternally active. And therefore, we must do something. But what? Yeah, we can do. Then, yes, can I do some service for you, Guru Maharaj? Can I do some service? Can I wash your clothes? Can I? There's already people washing my clothes. Can I clean your room? There are already people cleaning my room. Can I make a cup of tea for you? There are already people making buckets of tea for you. You know, it's like, how much tea can I drink? You know, how many clothes can I wear so that everyone can wash some clothes? How many pakoras can I eat so that everyone can cook some pakoras? Can we cook for you? Yeah, you know, the whole world can cook for me and I'll have a funeral the next day. You know, how much can you cook? How much can I eat? Watch out, some of you are dangerous in the kitchen. Stay away. Be there, you know. Lock them up, you know. Killers in the kitchen. Watch out. Then, what do we do? No, that's not important. Who cooks the khichdi or who cooks the this or the that? That's the least important. All right, somebody who can do it, you know, preferably. You know, someone who sort of gets it right or close. But, you know, for the rest, is it our business to live a long life and take prasad? Obviously not. To be well dressed in nice island clothes, to eat nice prasad and sit and live a long life, that's not our business. Our business is to change the world. So, therefore, the basic instruction of the spiritual master is change the world. Then you're doing something. Go out there, connect with people in some way or other and change them. Give them Krishna consciousness. That's what is pleasing to the spiritual master. That's what he lives for. That's his whole life. His whole life is dedicated to changing the world, giving Krishna consciousness to everyone, every single living being on the planet. And of course, be practical. One boy was preaching to the cows. And stood there, and like, you know, and he stood there at the side of the fence, and Prabhupada said, what's he doing? He's chanting to the cows. He goes every day to chant to the cows. Prabhupada, do something practical. Because cows are very nice, but cows, right, are also animals. They're also covered by the mode of ignorance. They're not going to go so far by all the chant. They're not going to stop. Not that the chant to the cows, and after a while the cows also start and start to chant. No. I chant Madhava. It's more easy for a cow. Madhava. Okay, so. Anyway, so that's not easy to get a cow to chant, right? So, what to do? Let's therefore, we are practical. Prabhupada taught this. He said, on the battlefield, there are many who are injured. And now the battlefield was the material world. And everyone is injured by birth, death, old age, and disease. And all these injured living beings are affected by the three modes of material nature. Now, you are the medical staff. Coming in to save the injured soldiers on the battlefield. Nurses. Things, white little suitcases with red crosses on, stretchers, etc. Prabhupada said, save, when you're on the battlefield and there are so many injured, save those who you can save. And you have to choose. You have to choose. You cannot save all at the same time. Therefore, choose. Don't preach to the cows, preach to human beings. Cows also get some prasad. That's okay. But our main mission is not to distribute prasadam to all the animals in the world. That's not on the top of our list. That's not number one priority. It's on the list, but it comes to the bottom of the list, towards the bottom. Because on the top is first. First, Atato Gyama Brahma Yigyasa. The Brahma Sutra says, Atato, Atato. Now, therefore, inquire into the Absolute Truth. Now, therefore. And it's explained by the Acharyas. Now, therefore means now that we have a human birth. Therefore, inquire into the Absolute Truth. So, human beings, they are target. Yeah, but human beings are troublesome. A cow is more fun, it's easier. Coochie, coochie, coo. Moo, moo, moo. Come, nice life, nice flower garden. They like flower gardens. I don't know if you know, but these Swamis we know. Yeah. Cows like flower gardens. You don't get too close. You know. Give it to them before they take it, kind of thing. No, so that's there. So somehow or other, passing on mercy to human beings is difficult because they don't want it.
Go away. Leave me alone. No. Not interested. Yeah. Cult member. Yeah. It's weird. Yeah. What's wrong with you? Go get a job. Get married. You know, be normal. Yeah. Be like everybody else. You're an anomaly in this world, you know, reminding us of things that, you know, we don't want to think about. You're basically telling us that our way of life is not good, just by walking around in your yellow, in your orange bed sheets. You're telling us, right, that our life is not good enough. We get out of here. We don't want you on this block, because we are very happy. Oh yes, in our community. And we're all the same, and that is very good, because in this way, everybody knows what to expect. Just be normal. No, so there's opposition. They're not just neutral, you know, and we have to sort of, some people may be neutral, but it's very rare to find someone who's neutral, even those who appear neutral, they may have some resistance. And then, therefore, Prabhupada says you have to find a spark. It's even the interested person. You can't tell them everything all at once. Right? Someone is interested. Like I have a story, which I wrote it once in the Dutch Krishna magazine, because it was a typical Dutch story. It was summer. And we were in Amsterdam. And in Amsterdam, it's like a cramped city, and the houses are just basically built on the sidewalk. There's no garden, nothing. So, you know, some people, they're lucky, they have a little bit of flat roof, and they all sit on the flat roof. But if you don't have that, then all you've got is the stoop. So, people do it in Amsterdam in the summer, and it's nice weather. They just put some chairs and tables outside and go sit on the stoop. So we were on the sitting on the stoop one evening. It was summer evening, so still light, because it stays light, warm. We're there, and the devotees take milk at night, right? So the temple, we're just sitting outside the temple. There was an entrance door, like in a shop, and then immediately at the entrance, a counter, a reception counter. Someone put a bucket with hot milk on the reception counter and calls out, "Does anyone want any hot milk?" Just then, there's a lady walking past with a dog. She says, "I'll take some hot milk, I'll take some." And she walks straight in, and the dog walks in as well. Next moment, the nice devotees, they suddenly start barking at her dog. So she's shocked, you know, these nice people, they hate my dog. And so she's all upset. I said, no, please, don't worry. It's just an Indian tradition that dogs don't go in the temple. said, but it's okay, because we can just sit on the stoop, because this is Amsterdam. Everybody sits on the stoop. He said, yeah, okay. We can sit on the stoop. It's summertime anyway. So we got her a chair, she sat down on the stoop. And then we started a conversation. And so we were like taking the milk, and we were saying like how we are meditating, you know, with mantra. She said, oh, I also sometimes meditate when I walk with my dog. I look in the water. That's far out. I said, yeah, I also used to walk with my dog, and the dog was named Krishna. And in this way, I brought it back to Krishna via a dog, since he was so interested in dogs. Anyway, so we had this conversation where somehow or other we were trying, where I was looking for how to connect with this lady, how to find the spark of interest, and how to fan it a little bit. And then that's how it is. It's not that somebody is totally interested in Krishna consciousness. They're just somehow or other attracted to an aspect of it. It's very rare that you'll find someone who's completely attracted to Krishna immediately. And just that person walks in the door and says, I want to surrender my life, and, you know, and never leaves again. But how many of those are there? Most people, it's a matter of finding the spark, fanning the spark, and sort of increasing the interest. So it's hard work. Prabhupada said it takes gallons of blood to convince one person. It's a huge effort. And that's why we rather stay home and knit socks. I have so many socks. You can't believe how many socks I have. I have in Radhanesh, I have one huge plastic box with only socks. And some are hand knit with devotion. And with love, no, really. I appreciate the love and the devotion. But what am I going to do with all these socks? I don't know. So many socks. I mean, I can start a sock shop. You know, sock shop, you know, t-shirts. I got millions of t-shirts, stacks of them everywhere. I have t-shirts in Joburg, t-shirts in Durban, I have t-shirts in Radhadesh, I have t-shirts in Australia, I have socks in Australia, I have sweaters everywhere, I have shoes everywhere, jackets everywhere, hats everywhere. I mean, I need 1,000 arms, 1,000 feet, 1,000 head to wear all those socks and all those hats and all those shoes and all those things. So, but in a way it's easy to do that kind of service for the spiritual master. It's easy because it's safe in a nice protected environment at home. But to do that job of, like, excuse me, that's tough to someone or other ask people to do something, to give a moment of attention to Krishna. That's tough. But yeah, that's the ultimate instruction, the ultimate instruction that pleases the spiritual master. If I can remind everyone of the Sankirtan seminar and the Sankirtan drive on Saturday. It's 2 million books. I have to also go. I will go shortly, not so long, because I have to finish a report about New York. That's the whole thing I have. What can I do? And Saturday is the final day.
So any questions or comments? I tried to make it a little entertaining, but it wasn't too boring.
Maharaj, every morning in front of Srila Prabhupada, we chant the Guru Vandana. So one of the stanzas there is saying that the spiritual master is my spiritual master, birth after birth. So let's say we don't make it out in this lifetime. Was that same soul that was our spiritual master in the previous life? Was that same soul then our spiritual master in the next life?
This point is there's some confusion on this point, that the relationship with the guru and disciple is eternal. And what does, first of all, about what eternal means, was the relationship already existing before? And when we meet our spiritual master, are we recognizing each other? Right? And do you have to, in looking for a spiritual master, do you have to go around and start like recognizing, is he the one? Is he the eternal one? Is he really the one? I mean, he's nice, but is he my eternal spiritual master? I'm not sure about that. Waiting for a sign. In one book I read, and then I saw a little moon above his head, and then I knew that he was the one. Okay, so that element is not so sure. That's not confirmed that actually there was a relationship necessarily before. So it can well be that relationship comes into being here in this world, but then from there on, ever after, then they live. So can meet in the material world now, so we don't no need for any moons or any such signs. Can just be comes into being in the here and now, and then go on ever after. So now you have this disciple. And this disciple is a real case, you know. Really. Keeps on bending the principles, you know, and bending them to a point. And then they go, bend them, and then, oops, they broke. Ay, ay, ay. And so on. One of those disciples. And then for that person, right, for that case, does the spiritual master have to come back? No, he doesn't have to come back. He may come back if he wants to. But didn't he accept the disciple? Yes. But then, doesn't he have to come back? Well, if the spiritual master goes to the spiritual world, then what happens? What happens then? Is he then completely absorbed there with Krishna and the eternal pastimes and so on? And what about the relationship with all those disciples that are still in the material world? Well, there's an interesting letter that I read from Srila Prabhupada on that regards. And Srila Prabhupada was saying, two letters actually, in the first letter he writes, Now my spiritual master has returned to the spiritual master and resumed to the spiritual world and resumed his eternal position as a manjari. And then in the second letter he writes, now that my spiritual master is in his position as a manjari, I'm sure that he still sees everything that I'm doing here. Aha. So the spiritual master can be in the spiritual world, his eternal pastimes, can still look down and into this world and see everything he do. And then Krishna, Krishna. Oh my God. What are they doing? So now what? And then there's the
case, the disciple that was the case. Now what is the spiritual master going to do about it? Oh, he's so powerful now that he is in his original spiritual identity. He can just manifest himself a little bit in somebody else. So in this way, job done. He's up there, still up there, and just does it to somebody else. Just like Chintamani is the example given by Bilvamangala Thakur, who's saying that his spiritual master Somagiri was manifesting through that prostitute Chintamani. So that's the evidence that is presented for that point. So, but the relationship is eternal. But in the spiritual world, exactly what it's going to look like, we still will accept the spiritual master and eternally respect the spiritual master. But it's also said the spiritual master takes a disciple by the hand, takes him to Krishna, and then leaves him alone with Krishna. Prahlad Maharaj didn't want that. He said, no, I want to serve my spiritual master. But in the spiritual world, we serve Krishna directly. Right? So, and of course, we respect our spiritual master, still there. But we may even be in different rasas. Yeah. What if you might not be in the same rasa as your spiritual master? We have proof of that in the example of Lila Chaitanya and Shamananda, isn't it? Yeah. One was in Sakyabhav and the other one was in Madhurya. So, different ones. Yeah. So many intricacies are there. And so some things we have to leave for Ron, you know, for later on, as you say. That's for Ron, it's dragon. That's for Ron, right? Later on. Yes, Ruth.
If you look at the Bhuvani, it's going to be so many different instructions.
Yeah. Yeah, but there is a general priority that I explained is that the spiritual master's mission is to deliver the entire world. So that is the priority. And then all the other instructions are about practicing. So there's achar and prachar, behavior and preaching. We are here to preach in this world, but we should also behave properly. So the instructions of the spiritual master relate to achar and prachar. And the essence is the prachar. Not that we neglect the achar. But sometimes we may have to neglect the achar when we're out there. Right? It's not when we're out preaching that we have to stop our preaching activity to go take a shower in the middle, because we are out there. It's like that we do when we're back in the temple. Now that we're on the street, we'll just be on the street. It's not like, oh my God, shower time. No, the priority is preaching. It's prachar, not achar. But achar contains the purity. Behavior contains the purity. So you must behave purely. But sometimes for the sake of preaching, we relax some things of behavior. But not the four regulated principles. They cannot be bent. Forbidden to bend. It's an achar instruction. The four regulative principles are so fixed that nothing, even a hurricane, cannot bend them. Nothing. Like mountains. We don't hear any mountain, had a problem with the hurricane. Of course, there are no mountains in Florida, but, no issue. So one has to be like a mountain. A disciple has to become very heavy in commitment. That is, if that's not there, then what kind, if we are like a balloon, then what can we preach? And so if we fail to fix the achar, and we fail to become like a mountain and we're as light as a balloon, then, please, take this Krishna consciousness. Meanwhile, we are floating away into like the material turmoil, and we have to fix ourselves like a mountain and gain some weight, spiritual weight, by absorbing Bhagavata. Bhagavata. Then we gain some spiritual weight. Right? Chanting good rounds, not just filling the quota. Not just mumbo jumbo, in between. No. Quality time for quality chanting. But then sometimes for preaching, we put our quality time aside. Yesterday I chanted 16 rounds and then sat down early in the morning. Working, then I went till late night, and then this morning I wasn't that early, so. And then I went straight back onto the report. And then, as you were like all having an ecstatic kirtan, I was ecstatically chanting japa outside. It was very nice. But now I have to carve out some time to chant today. Sometimes we put that's achar. That behavior aside for preaching. Because preaching is ultimately our priority. So like that, it's clear the priorities are not like mystic, now my spiritual master is not here anymore, now how will I know what is the priority? It's not like that. It's crystal clear. He made it.
You speak about outreach preaching?
Outreach preaching.
I mean, sometimes we call it like
outreach slash preaching.
That we preach to new people, but also we have to preach to ourselves. You said like having retreats and seminars and everything is also preaching to ourselves.
Yeah.
Is that how is that?
It's okay. You have to eat, right? Mm. We have to eat. If we don't eat, then after a while we get weak. So if there's no spiritual nourishment, then we get weak. So therefore we do have some seminars, some retreats to provide ourselves with spiritual nourishment. But if we are becoming a movement which only exists to feed ourselves, then we are an inbred movement, an inbred culture. So again, the spiritual nourishment is important. It must be part of our life. But then, what are we going to do to put Krishna out there? And if we don't do that, the movement will dry up. And when the movement will dry up, the temples will become empty. And only on Sunday, people will come. But those people will all not follow so much. Some, but many will not, because they only come on Sunday. It's hard to follow everything when you only come on Sunday. So you have to fill up the temples by vigorous preaching, by going on Harinam around the block and asking someone, hey, come. Somebody good. And have a book. When you're a book distributor, have a book with you. If you knew how to do it, if you know how to do it, then have something with you. There's always that person that you meet that just needs that one bit. something.
Reading Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a lot of sanction in it, and I have notes that are not with me right now, on circumstances where various castes are given sanction to change or break the regulated principles. And when I am preaching, the way that I like to preach is to say, yes, you know, these are the principles, but there's a middle ground, there's yukta, there's something in between. I don't know exactly how to correlate that to the Krishna consciousness movement, or if it's a specifically Brahminical thing, or if it applies to everybody.
Yeah, there are complexities sometimes where we find that in Vedic literature, we find descriptions about Varna Ashram, and Varna Ashram is a society, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Sudras, each with their duties and their standards, and then we find that sometimes Brahmanas perform animal sacrifices, but they're forbidden in Kali Yuga, yeah, it says. So, Kalo Pancham Vivarajaya, that's forbidden in Kali Yuga. Then, so that settles it for the Brahmanas. But then, what about the Kshatriyas? They need to learn, they need to know how to kill, because they have to protect, they have to be warriors. So, they're allowed to hunt. So, you know, I'm a Kshatriya. No, first become a Kshatriya before we allow you that. First become a Kshatriya. Not just like, I take a bow and arrow and I'm a Kshatriya. No, you are a Sudra who takes a bow and arrow. That to be a Kshatriya, it's not about martial arts. To be a Kshatriya is about morality. Be deeply trained in spiritual morality. Then you can kill animals in the forest. Only then, when you're duly trained as in our Varna Ashram society. So Prabhupada speaks about an emergency. He says it's an emergency, and we have to again reintroduce Varna Ashram. We have to especially create a Brahminical class and a Kshatriya class. But it's emergency. So for emergency sake, we call some Brahmanas, we call some Kshatriyas, but they're emergency cases. They're not really yet qualified. They have to develop their qualifications. The Brahmanas have to become very detached and just give knowledge and give away whatever charity they receive. Nothing should stick. Yes, give the donations. Brahman, Brahman. give, but no, you have to pass it on. So very difficult, kshatriya, yes, give me the weapons, yes, let's go hunting, you know, let's go for da-da-da-da-da-da-da. This is fun, yeah, I'm definitely kshatriya, I love this, it's in my blood, it's me. No, kshatriya means almost a Brahmin. Very learned in scripture, very learned, and living by it. The Varna, the four Varnas can be divided in two. The Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas, they sacrifice their personal interest for Dharma. They live completely for Dharma. The Vaishyas and the Sudras, they mix their personal interest with Dharma. Everyone accepts Dharma, Varnashram, Dharma. But the Vaishyas and the Sudras, they mix personal interest. Kshatriya is like completely dedicated to Dharma. Now his Dharma allows him some room for personal interests. Yeah? Even the Brahmana, he's allowed some room for personal interest, but he doesn't take more than what is allowed. The Vaishya and the Sudra, they cannot minimize their personal interests, so therefore they sometimes, you know, like if it's profit or Dharma, can you do, you know, just grab the cash and then after follow Dharma, that's Vaishya. Profit before Dharma. Sudra is like, you know, I mean, Dharma, yeah? Doesn't make sense. It's not me. I can't identify with this. You know? I am what I am. I'm a man. Okay. What about what? Personally, you are what?
I identify with the Kshatriya caste more than the other castes. I've done a lot of martial arts and so on.
Sure, fine.
So I walk into a drug house full of gangsters busy smoking bottle tops of heroin or
okay.
Now I've got books and I'm talking to people. In order to take these people from where they are into a somewhat more elevated position, I can organize a street thing, which is there, that's fine. And they need to have a path forward. You can't say to them, you can't do that, stop doing that, you need to do this, you need to do that. You can't do that. They're not going to even begin to accept you.
That's right.
So there has to be a path in between. They're not even going to accept that in this life.
Yeah, a path, that's okay. You know, we can give people steps in between. But it doesn't mean that we change the philosophy. We just say the ideal standard, the sinless standard of life, for every human being, is these four regulated principles. Of course, there are a lot of people who cannot get there. So that's okay. You can still do devotional service and elevate yourself. And if as a human being, you're not elevating yourself, then you're wasting your human form of life. So in this way, you can simply give them steps, the steps before the four regulated principles. Many things you can do for Krishna before you do four regulated principles. And most welcome. And we understand. We know. It takes time. It's not so easy. Yeah? So it's not like, oh my God, you're not following four. That's terrible. But usually after a while, we begin to nag you. You know, no meat, fish, and eggs. You know, when you're becoming a vegetarian, you know, how long are you going to keep on? You know, you can't really make much of things, but as long as you're killing animals, or your food, you know, it's like really, it's cruel and so hard-hearted. I mean, how can you expect to develop some spiritual advancement? Neck, until they become vegetarian. Okay, we got one down, vegetarian. Okay, nail it down, screw it, you know, like me. Completely, bang, got that in. Now the next one, right? Intoxication. I know. And then we work. I mean, gambling is stupid, right? It's just stupid. It's like, who's getting rich, the gambler or the casinos? It's quite obvious. They're advertising more and more in these casinos. They're making a lot of money. That means everyone's losing. Yeah. As we see that the casinos are growing bigger and bigger and bigger, it proves that all the gamblers are losing. So that's quite clear. So it's stupid, you know. So that's easy to convince people, at least philosophically, that gambling is stupid. Right? Okay, you know, corner them, another principle down. Right?
See, there's also, while we're on intoxication, there's also the conception, and it may or may not be valid, that various plants and practices, ayahuasca, etc., can lead one towards spiritual advancement.
Yeah.
Many people have experienced that.
Well, you know, in the 60s, there were lots of stuff around, and what can I say? And people were taking, and the Beatles also were experimenting, and Stephen sang Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. And what can we say? But it is Lucy. It is hallucination. Because you think you go a step forward, but at the same time you go a step backward. You get a different perspective on reality through the drug, which makes it look different and can affect your thinking. But meanwhile, you develop attachment deeper into matter because you get attached to the drug as well. So, what seems to lead you forward becomes a problem. And if you don't believe it, then I'll show you Amsterdam. I mean, we can see what happened. What happened to the flower power movement? I can show you.
Hare Krishna showed up from that.
No. Prabhupada used that. Prabhupada used the flower power, but in a place like Amsterdam, Prabhupada did a program, sat down on the stage in the park, and said, for these people, only kirtan and prasad. No philosophy. There's no point. So, it pulls us into ignorance. Yeah. And it's therefore intoxication, ultimately, doesn't help. And you can also get that transcendental knowledge without, it's not necessary. The idea is I need to pop LSD at least once to see beyond to the other side. To the other side. To the other side. You know, it's not required. Okay, breakfast has approached. Mine hopefully is approaching. Yours, I don't know. But the time has come, I need to say. Thank you very much, Srimad Bhagavatam.
Jai. Jai.